Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. I am your host, Brent Henderson, and remember, we are the resistance. Man, I think I have started off the past at least several episodes with something that kind of was like, wow, what a crazy week it's been, right? I think I'm going to stop saying that now. As crazy as, like, it's become the norm. I mean, this world is totally whacked right now. Stacy, my wife, took me to go see a concert last Friday night, and it was a late Father's Day gift. It was Foreigner and Styx, which I was kind of surprised that Foreigner opened up for Styx. I mean, I loved both bands, you know, as a teenager growing up, but Foreigner, their performances vocally and every, it's just amazing. But anyhow. So we get to the concert. We know we kind of got to park a million miles away, and we get in there right as everything is just getting started. And, you know, we watched, I can't remember who the opener was before Foreigner. And then we watched Foreigner. And in that break, in between, you know, Foreigner and Styx, Stacy gets on her phone. You know, there's that like 20 minutes of dead time in between, and she's scrolling. And remember, Friday is when the Olympics started, right? The ceremonies and everything. And she sees this thing pop up on, I think it was social media, about the opening and, you know, just, I think it was like about, people were thinking they were mocking the Last Supper with what they were doing on there. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. To be honest with you, I'm watching so many things happen in this world right now that are just crazy, that it's beginning to like dominate my thoughts. It's beginning to dominate conversations in my home, in my marriage, with my friends, and even like on this podcast. I understand that I want to bring you guys relevant stuff that's happening now, because I know you're probably going to want to listen to, you know, things that are happening now. You know, what are my thoughts or others' thoughts? How can we process this stuff? I think that's great. But I got to be careful, because there is so much of this stuff right now that if that's the only diet that I have is about, you know, politics and the things that are going on in this world, I can begin to miss what's right in front of me. You know, like sitting on the steps of our house and having a conversation with our 15-year-old about her life right now. You know, just things that she's looking at and trying to make sense of. The ways that my wife needs me to show up for her, how I can listen better to her, how I can love her, how I can spiritually, you know, lead her. But when we can get too much of things like politics, I'm just going to say it out loud, it can really begin to kind of take us over and begin to see things through a lens that is not God's lens. We begin to see things through a darkness. It's like this present darkness, rather than since the beginning of time, God will do what he says he's going to do. He will take care of us. He will repay evil, you know, with consequences. And I sometimes forget that. But there is a place and a time for us to speak up, for our voices to be heard. And I kind of want to just talk a little bit about that in this, but we're going to go into some other stuff I think you're really going to grow from. And I think it's going to help a lot of this stuff that I was just talking about. So I was watching, you know, the Olympics as a kid, and I haven't watched any of the Olympics. Some of it was because my schedule was busy, and some of it's just because, like I just said, I need to kind of step away a little bit. But as a kid, I used to watch the Olympics, you know, the Winter and Summer Olympics. What was it, like every 4 years? And I can remember watching this boxer by the name of Sugar Ray Leonard. Many of you will probably remember and probably idolized him. And I would be back in the den of our house where we had our television. We only had one television back then. We didn't have one in every room like people do now. But when no one was around and I was watching Sugar Ray box, I wanted to be him. So I'd set up this pillow, right, on the couch, kind of like at this certain level height-wise, and I would punch it and pretend to be Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, I wanted to be like him. I didn't want to be him, but I wanted to be that talented, that good at something that I did that people could notice about me, and that I somehow connected my good enough would be good enough if I could be someone like that. But he was one of the best boxers I had ever seen. And to this day, I've never seen anyone who just had the hand speed this guy had. And our whole family, we'd sit together, you know, we'd watch the opening ceremonies when they would come on. You know what? It's a chance, if only for a moment in time, to see all the countries of the world represented. You know, as they all come, you know, marching in, holding their flags and wearing their colors, there's a sense of pride and there's a sense of maybe unity. One of the only times we can look every, you know, few years and see the whole world come together. There's like a common bond that the Olympics bring. And competition, you know, of the best athletes in the world, you know, that's what was on the menu. And that is something that I could not get enough of when the Olympics would come on. But, you know, after seeing some of the highlights of the opening ceremonies that came from France, honestly, I was deeply angered and I was really saddened. Not just because of whatever was going on with all the, you know, the drag queens up there with little kids, which greatly bothered me. You know, you do you, but don't put stuff on our kids. Or how the arguments, you know, broke out online, you know, whether they were mocking the Last Supper or not. But because, once again, you know, something began to divide our nation. And I was like, man, I said last week, I'm so done. And it just feels like everything now is almost planned to be in our face. Man, you know, we've been seeing that kind of stuff happening since, at least in my recent memory, since about 2020. It just feels like there's an agenda, and the agenda is not to bring unity like what the Olympics can do, but to cause division. Yeah, that's the word. You know, within minutes, arguments, you know, of us seeing this at the concert the other night, arguments began to break out on social media. You know, some were defending the depiction of the debauchery that was televised around the world. You know, some proclaiming it was a mockery of the Last Supper. But that display was put into everyone's living room or on social media. And obviously it was intentional. So without going, you know, into it as if they were mocking the Last Supper, or whether it was this erotic, you know, artistic display of referencing Dionysus, I think it was, the Greek god of wine. You know, to put that display on the Olympic Games opening up with little children in the middle of what they were doing up there, it disgusted me. I the depravity of the world is it shouldn't shock me, because it's been going on since the very beginning of time. And like I said, you do you. And this isn't any kind of an attack against any race, religion. This is the things that I see up there. When you have little kids being put in the mix with all this, when their brains aren't ready to be able to process and function and choose a lot of things at this age. And this has nothing to do with whether you're gay or straight. I don't believe it's right to involve little kids in that kind of stuff. I don't like seeing small children in our schools being taught things that their minds can't understand yet. And personally, I don't want it in my home. And so you put your trust into a network that what they're going to be putting out there is at least going to be something that where the family doesn't have to worry about seeing something like that. And I did a little bit of the research afterwards, and I went to a lot of different websites to make sure that what I was getting was what really happened. And there were a few of those, I don't know, actors, whatever you want to call them, that had their genitals exposed. I mean, honestly, isn't that child abuse? I mean, when you have adults and you're exposing yourself, isn't that some form of like pedophilia? You know, if it was okay to depict sex acts with children present, I mean, isn't that why so many in the world were enraged with what happened like on Epstein Island? Or what we're seeing happening with the sex trafficking at the border now and around the world? For me, the Bible makes it clear, and it's in 1 Thessalonians 5:22. And it tells us to abstain from all appearances of evil. You know, I don't know what the intent of the creator or the actors from the opening ceremony believe or trying to do or whatever, but I do know that debauchery, you know, things like drunkenness, fornication, are not okay with God. And if that offends you, okay, be offended. You know, I'm a believer. I'm not going to apologize for that. And again, this has nothing to do with your sexual preference, your race, nothing. And I'm not trying to compare any of those communities with pedophilia. I do know that sleeping around with anyone you want is bad. I mean, that's one way diseases get passed. Being drunk is not a good thing. You know, that's why there's laws about drinking and driving. You know, that's when mistakes can happen, you know, leading to things like unwanted pregnancies, you know, anger, fighting, sexual abuse. You know, there's lots of stuff. And if it was about mocking the Last Supper, that really does sadden me, because they are mocking the very one who died for all of our debauchery, so that we could be, you know, free, so that we could be forgiven. I think one of the biggest questions many of us might have had, you know, after we saw this, and then seeing all the arguments on social media, you can't get around it if you're on social media at all or in the news or whatever, is, you know, what are we supposed to say or do about this? I mean, that's the $6 million question. You know, am I a coward if I'm silent? You know, am I a warrior if I'm vocal? I want to go back. I want to go back in Scripture, and I want to take a few minutes and try to understand, looking at history, what happened when God's people disobeyed His commands. You can be a warrior and you can be a tender man after God's own heart, but ignoring what we're seeing totally, you know, is that a form of cowardice? And cowardice is not an option for Christians. You know, we don't need to tolerate debauchery, you know, put in our face. But we also don't need to try and convey a holier-than-thou attitude. It's not one of us is without sin. Only Jesus was. It is so disturbing when those with non-Christian views deliberately put their beliefs in your face. But I've also experienced anger of those, let's just say, would try to convert those around them at a restaurant that they might think aren't Christians by praying extra loud to try to prove, you know, how good they are, how holy they are. Stacy and I were at a restaurant in Muncie, Indiana, not long ago. We were in the outdoor of this Mexican restaurant, and there was maybe 8 people sitting around a table, and they were very loudly talking about a lot of their beliefs, which everybody has that freedom. But when the prayer came, it was very religious sounding, and it was so loud that everyone can hear it. Now, again, what I'm saying, I didn't want to have to see this stuff on the opening ceremonies. And I do think there is a time and a place where we minister to others. We can share our beliefs with someone. When we are in a relationship, we have trust with them, or someone comes to hear what we have to say. But I think we have to be careful the way that we put our beliefs out there in front of others, because many times I think they're going to see us as holier than thou, and trying to shove something down their throat. And I think, like with anything, we have to be careful how we do that, to put love, compassion, truth out there where people actually can and want to listen to it, where it feels safe for them to hear it. You know, I don't think Jesus was going to these places, these venues in his day, you know, calling out all the sinners and then just packing up and leaving after he had proclaimed that, right? He went to the places many of us today would probably call sinful. But he went to have relationship with these people, to get into their worlds, to meet them where they were, to understand where they were. He loved them, but he did proclaim truth and love to them in the right time. And then what would he do? He would love them well, and then he would tell them the truth, and then say things like, now go and sin no more. And yes, there were times when we definitely saw his righteous anger came out. So maybe some of you are like, well, you know, is there a time for that? Well, yeah, there is. I mean, if we're following the teachings of Jesus, right? Like at the temple where he overturned the money changers, the tables, you know, he was really driving them out. They had made his father's house into a marketplace and making it into a mockery and all these kind of things. So there is absolutely a time. You know, there were times when God warned his people to stop their sinful behaviors like Sodom and Gomorrah, or they would be destroyed. Scripture, you know, it says in 2 Chronicles 7:14, and I listen closely and apply this to what we're seeing right now. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Let's go back to a little bit of some stuff in the Bible. Let's go back to the conquest of Canaan. You know, Israel was imprisoned in Egypt for 400 years until, you know, God miraculously delivers them. And he takes them out into the wilderness, and they were supposed to go north to the land they lived in before, God's promised land. And he had sworn to them, this would be your land forever. But in the course of over 400 years, some really bad people move in, and they're doing, you know, crimes against humanity kind of stuff, you know, doing, you know, terrible cult sacrifices, killing, molesting children, you know, whatever you could imagine, they were doing it. And it's like walking in on the Nazis killing the Jews by the tens of thousands. And they were putting up with it. You know, I've personally been in Germany years ago, back in the 80s, and stood there. I think that one of the places I was called like Bergen-Belsen, I think, was one of them. And you see like this mound of dirt, and there's a plaque, you know, 10,000 buried here, 20,000 buried here. And there were way too many of these mass graves. And the people didn't want to believe it was happening, you know, back in the 1940s, because I think that they just couldn't imagine humanity being that bad, especially the culture that they were coming from. And they didn't fight back, and they kept going along with whatever their leaders were telling them. They knew something wasn't right, and I think most of us right now, we're kind of looking at this world, and especially in our country recently, and going, something is not right. But back then in the 40s, they knew something wasn't right, but they refused to stop it. You know, maybe it was out of fear of what might happen to them, or maybe it was just because they didn't believe that it was real. But it was real. And it became one of the greatest crimes and tragedies to ever be committed against mankind. And so that's what was happening when Israel came back to the promised land. But instead of trusting God and fighting back against the evil that they could see with their own eyes, they played the part of cowards. And so what did God do? He sends them out into the desert for 40 years. They were literally walking out a death sentence for their cowardice. And because they refused to go to war to stop the atrocities, they were sent away from what was promised them. And it wasn't until the next generation that they finally went back to do what their parents and grandparents should have been doing all along. It was now left up to them. But the good news about that next generation is that they weren't being brainwashed by the culture that they were about to go to war against. Yeah, that's not what we're facing today. You know, we have generations that have been being brainwashed, and we got to pay attention. So are we to stand up against the things that go against God? Well, first, we have to know not just the tender, loving, empathetic God that we see through Jesus, but we also have to know the Lord our God as a warrior. Exodus 15:3 says, "The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name." Psalm 144:1 says, "Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle." So if you want to be a good soldier, you follow the Lord's teachings and you obey when he moves your spirit to action. But we have to know God. We have to understand when he's speaking to us, how he speaks to us, and how he would have us to speak to these things. But definitely, we're never called to just allow atrocities and things to happen without speaking up, without doing something about it. And I'm talking about being obedient, to call out what is evil, and to not go silent out of fear of being attacked by those who hate God. We are living at a time when our entire world has become a literal dumpster fire. You know, it's a time when laws and morality are just being kicked into the flames. But here's what the Bible says about what's happening. "The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth and bring to nothing by the appearance of his coming." So how many of you listening to this have been feeling like your voice for truth is being silenced. You know, the good you want to see in this world for not just you, but for your kids, your family, and your friends. How many of you have posted something on social media that was like immediately attacked, calling you things like a bigot, a racist, a liar, a narcissist, homophobic, holier than thou, you know, whatever? Did you call that person out specifically to call them a derogatory name? Or was it just that they were offended, you know, by a truth or a fact that stated that hits too close to home? So let me say something to that. That's not your issue. That's their issue. We are called to proclaim the truth, and we are also called to love our enemies. You know, is it not loving to let destructive behaviors and policies go unchecked? Uh-uh. You know, that goes for both political parties, but how we do it and how we handle that conversation makes all the difference in whether our voices will be heard or if they're going to be shut down, not having the effect, you know, that we hope that they would. You know, last week I stated that you remember me saying this, I said, I've had enough, I'm done, I think is what I said, of the lying and cheating that we've been watching happen as, you know, Biden's closest party members, the media, his family, and now presidential candidate Kamala Harris, you know, covered up for his mental decline, putting our country at grave risk around the world. And I talked about the attempted assassination of former President Trump, and I spoke about how the former head of the Secret Service had no answers, you know, to what the assassin, you know, how the assassin slipped through their fingers. Or did he? You know, watching, you know, President Biden step down after being pressured to do so and seeing, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris ushered into the presidential candidacy or whatever you want to call it, without Americans being able to vote on that, if they really wanted her to be their choice. You know, just as I'd had enough, and so had my wife recently when she was seeing all this stuff, she took to social media and she posted about it. But the result that I think she was hoping for, that people would see it and understand and maybe support or get on board or whatever, it ended up becoming a vicious verbal attack from some people that matter deeply to her. And it didn't just break her heart. It literally broke her. You know, there's times when we need to say what needs to be said bluntly and factually. And there are times when we need to take our time with a person that we disagree with and don't use derogatory words or statements which does nothing but keep throwing fuel on an already raging fire. And I'll be honest, and most of you who follow me on Facebook, you know this. Most of my posts are about God. You know, there's scripture, they're about hope, they're about wisdom, they're about loving well. And there's also posts I'll put up there about family vacations, you know, my date nights with my wife, maybe an upcoming event where I'm going to be speaking. I rarely make a political post, but I've been tagged in a few. And there's been a few occasions when I couldn't not call out a lie that was so destructive that I felt millions of lives were going to be at stake. You know, what I have personally experienced is very similar to Stacy, you know, whether I posted on the content or if I was tagged in it. You know, even if what I've said is based on truth and facts, if it doesn't line up with how someone on the opposing side views it, it just seems like there's no questions asked of why I might believe that way. It just, and I think many of you can relate to this, it becomes an immediate attack on our character or maybe on our belief system. This is crazy. I actually had a woman get mad at me and verbally attack me for a post that I was tagged in that I didn't even make. And I didn't even realize I had been posted in it. And I get this blasting from her. And she tells me that I am what's wrong with this country. And then she shames me and she says, how could you call yourself a Christian for supporting a certain part of your policy? And then she goes on to say that she can no longer listen to my voice and that she is choosing to no longer be a Christian because of me. Wow. I didn't know I had that kind of power. You know, I thought a person was a Christian because of what Jesus did on the cross for their sins. You know, I have dedicated my life to know God and to lead people to Jesus and the teachings of the Bible. But now those with the loudest voice, those with the shaming voices out there in social media, they are silencing and effectively assassinating those voices that love God and want to live by the Word of God. Make no mistake about it. Satan hates God and will do anything he can to take down voices proclaiming God's truth, and he will not let anything get in his way. And one of his main weapons is pitting family member against family member with political disagreements, just as what we saw happen during COVID between the vaxxers and the anti-vaxxers. Let me say something. I think the reason I believe that we all want our voices heard, honestly, is because we're scared. We're scared that the way of life that we want is going to be taken away, disregarded, you know, kicked to the curb by someone with differing views. And it is so important to remember that a person's belief systems are formed by their experiences. So what they believe is very real to them. And sometimes they are so real that they are willing to leave the very family they love for their point of view. And what happens is when a person is so afraid that you won't see things the way that they do, they go silent. They will stop communicating, they won't speak up, and then there's either a massive blow up or a total breakup that occurs, all because they chose to let the pressure mount and weren't honest about their feelings and beliefs. That's why you see the vitriol on social media happening that is now penetrating into our very homes and the ones that we love the most. So let me just kind of start taking this in a direction now, because I don't want to stir the pot more. I want to bring some healing to this. So the question becomes, how do we fix this? Can it be fixed if people are on opposing sides? Republican versus Democrats, Christians versus atheists, straight versus gay. Can we truly coexist? And I don't know that we will always be able to agree on everything, but we can learn to communicate so that our voices can be heard and to create a place where everyone can be understood. What's the key? It's communication. And that communication needs to happen without an agenda demanding the other changes to your point of view. That doesn't work. No one likes being controlled or told what to do. You know, I've been a certified life coach. I've been an ordained pastor now for many, many years. And I have worked with a lot of different types of people, whether they're gay, straight, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, male, female, couples, felons, Christians, non-Christians, left, right, kids, whatever. The list goes on. But what did they all have in common? They all wanted to be heard, and they all wanted to know that they matter, to be cared about. I created something, probably about a dozen years ago now, and I call it Guide. And what it is, it's a communication tool that others can learn to use to diffuse difficult conversations like we're talking about. And I can't think of another time in my lifetime that using something like this tool is more vital. And if we don't learn how to communicate with each other in a constructive way, the destruction of relationships that we've known and cherished, or even the destructing of our country, is what's at stake. It's that big. It was maybe 2 days ago, I made a social media post and I said, don't confuse empathy as a sign of weakness. Sometimes it's a sign of incredible love, strength, and patience. So to learn this tool that I'm about to share with you, it's going to require empathy. That may be a sacrifice for some of us. It means we're going to have to really learn to care about the other people that we're talking to. If we're following the teachings of Jesus, we do care. Jesus cared so much about all of us that he sacrificed his own life that we could find life. He took the bullet. This is going to call you to love. It's going to require strength. It's going to require caring. And it's even going to require patience as you listen first to what the other person has to say. And to truly understand where they're coming from before you invite them to understand your point of view. It has to be in that order, because if you demand that they listen to your point of view before you really listen to theirs, they're going to feel unheard. They're going to feel like you're not worth their time. and that you have an agenda that you want them to agree with. You know, they feel like they have become a voice that you want silenced just because, you know, it's causing you the inconvenience of being in a conversation that you just want to go away. You know, and I think that many times they're right. We just want to fix others rather than really care about their point of view. Okay, so what is GUIDE? G-U-I-D-E. It's an acronym. I'll explain it here. It's a disarming tool is what it is. You know, like when I'm hunting in an unknown area, it's always good to have someone who knows that area when I'm getting ready to go in there because they can guide me, you know, where to go, how to be safe, and hopefully successful. Well, GUIDE is an acronym that we're going to break down. And if you have a pen and paper, I would highly recommend you get it right now and you begin to write down these things that you really want to see happening, change happening with everything that we just talked about. So go ahead, get yourself a pencil and paper, and we'll get started. All right. So G, the letter G, stands for get some truth. Notice I didn't say get the truth, because the truth may look different to both individuals because of their story. You know, even if what the other person believes is only 10% true, it's very true for them, or they wouldn't be so upset about it. You have to let them talk about it and tell you how they see a situation through their lens. This is where you have to swallow your need to be right and just listen. Again, G, get some truth. U stands for understand before being understood. And what this is, really, it's caring. This is extending empathy. This is learning to respect where they are coming from. You know, whether you agree with it or not, you're still respecting their voice of why they see things the way they see it. And if you can't do this, honestly, it shows that you care more about yourself and your agenda than you do them. And when that happens, they will shut you off. This is where you have to learn how to repeat and rephrase what they've said until both of you are clear on what the other person is trying to communicate. Okay, I stands for inquire. It's asking questions. This is the time when you begin to ask questions. You've gotten some truth. You've tried to understand before being understood, and now you're inquiring, you're asking questions, and you're doing it without an agenda. What I mean is you ask the questions from what you've heard them say and not trying to steer them into believing the way you believe or what you believe. If the truth is what you're both after, any agenda to fix the other person, it's got to be laid aside. I love, it's in Romans 14:4. It's out of the Message paraphrase. And it starts off this passage with talking about how to cultivate good relationships. It obviously means that much, and that's why it's in the Bible. So let's go back to Romans 14:1 first. And it says this, welcome with open arms fellow believers who don't see things the way you do. And don't jump all over them every time they say or do something that you don't agree with, even when it seems that they are strong on opinions but weak in the faith department. Remember, they have their own history to deal with. And then it finishes up by saying, treat them gently. Most of the time, that's how we saw Jesus doing it, right? The woman caught in adultery, the woman at the well, he would speak into their lives. He was meeting their needs, but then he would also speak the truth to them and encourage them to go and do something differently. When you have the woman at the well, you know, Jesus, you know, he's getting her water. He's speaking to her. And she was from a different culture, which went against the culture of that time, and let alone being a woman. And she was known for having, you know, multiple husbands. But he gets into her world and he speaks to her. She goes back to her town, her community, and shares with everybody of this man who spoke this grace into her life. And it changed the entire community. Remember, they have their own history to deal with. Treat them gently. So then I just want to go on a couple of verses where it says in Romans 14:4, and this is one of my favorite passages. It says, if there's manners to be learned or corrections to be made, God can handle that without your help. I think we think we're helping sometimes when we get on someone's post that we don't agree with, and we have to show our truth, our facts. And I think, great, talk about how you feel. Talk about what you see the facts and can back them up with. Be careful how you do it, right? It's difficult when someone's attacking you to really want to listen to what they have to say. But if we can do it with love and empathy and with confidence in what we believe, There's something about that that draws others to want to know what that truth is. You know, the Bible tells us not to be a coward. It tells us to trust in the Lord. It tells us to listen to those that we disagree with and to treat them gently. But don't you personally want to shut down as soon as someone attacks your point of view? Or you want to try to judge them in return? How do you feel when they ask you why you believe that way? But the question is, are they really trying to understand you? You know, when a person does approach you in a way that says, I really am just trying to understand something, it softens you, right? And now there's a much better chance of healthy communication happening, and that's where revelation begins to happen. And that is where the letter I, like I just said, the inquiry, the asking of questions, is so important. It's not just about asking questions, but it's about knowing what to ask. Big difference. And you know what to ask because you were listening to what they had to say. You know, asking the right questions lets them know that you were listening and that you didn't just, you know, want to fix or manipulate them. And once you learn how to ask the right questions, again, that's when revelation begins to happen for both of you. You might remember it was in one of my earliest Unleashed podcasts. I talked about being sucked down to the bottom of a deep whirlpool while on a fishing trip with my son. You know, I get sucked down to the bottom of this whirlpool. You know, I couldn't get out of it. It was spinning. It was on a bend where these two streams had come together. And as I get sucked down in this thing, I'm getting tangled up in these branches, and there was like a fallen tree in there. And I'm being sucked down to the bottom. And when I get sucked down, I either landed on a rock or a big part of that tree. I honestly don't know what it was, but it helped stop me being stuck. I was able to get my footing, and I was able to push off and get to the surface. And at the end of the story, and if you've read my book, I think that was in Into the Wilds, the man who had been mentoring me, he was my guide. He asked me if hitting bottom was a good thing or a bad thing. And at first, I was kind of a little bit confused. I mean, come on, dude, I just got sucked into the bottom of a whirlpool. It was a bad thing. And all I could recall was the trauma that I'd experienced. But after he'd asked me, you know, what hitting bottom did for me, was it a good thing or a bad thing, I realized that's what saved my life. I said, you know, had I not hit bottom, I'd have been caught in that whirlpool and I would have drowned. It was knowing the right question by listening to my story closely, asking me the right questions that helped me get to the revelation that I needed to get to the truth. He didn't give me the answer. We can't just give someone the answers. You don't know something until you know it, right? You might have the knowledge, but until you've worked it into your life through your experiences, it doesn't become real. It doesn't become a part of your belief system. He didn't give me the answer. He just asked me the right questions. So if we've been able to be patient, you know, through the first three letters that I just talked about, G, you know, get some truth, you understand before being understood, and I, inquiry, asking questions without an agenda, now we can move on to the next letter, which is D. And if the other person is still being combative or pushing back, you're going to have to go back to the beginning again. Start with G all over. You know, starting over can be hard, and it's going to take patience, like I was saying earlier. But it builds trust that you really care about the other person and hearing where they're coming from, their experiences, why they believe what they believe. And then we get to learn what not to do next time when we're going down through guide. So if things are beginning to calm down by now in your conversation, you've applied these three things I just said, now you're ready to move on to letter D. And D is discuss my feelings. This is where I can now open up about, you know, how I see things the way that I do. You know, what I've experienced that have shaped my thoughts and actions the way that I believe. The things that they are seeing me act out, live out, talk about. And if you've handled it well to this point, they're probably going to be a lot more open and understanding to begin to ask you questions like you just did them, because they're curious. And after you had a chance to discuss your feelings, now, if things are still going well, absolutely move on to the last letter, which is E. And E stands for encouragement. This is where I can bring hope back into the conversation, and that helps strengthen our relationship. You know, it might look something like, you know, I'm so glad I've had a chance to really hear what you've been thinking and feeling. you matter to me. And I really want us to be able to be honest and open, you know, in our communication, because our relationship is what's most important. Can you see how using guide can help turn down the temperature in the room and help navigate to a more peaceful, you know, and honestly caring conversation? It's a trust builder. It's like a bank account. You know, when we make withdrawals by using degrading comments, you know, name calling, shaming, using condemnation, that bank account, that emotional bank account, relational bank account, it gets low. And we have to make deposits to restore the account back to where it once was. You know, it's said that for every major withdrawal that we do, it takes about 5 deposits to get the account back to normal. Being willing to listen well, to say you're sorry, or maybe even ask for forgiveness if needed, not for how you might still see things through your lens, but maybe for using unhealthy actions to try and get the other person to change. You know, we can try to manipulate someone, is what I'm trying to say, with our unhealthy actions, withdrawing, right, using all those derogatory things. When we choose not to do that, it deepens the respect between us both, and it creates humility. So let me ask you a question. Is learning to walk in humility a good thing or a bad thing? I'll see you next time.